So that's what last week we were discussing in the Chalukah of Rishonim, whether the malacha, tzeveya, dyeing of coloring, makes any sense in context of ochlin. If you dye a food, well, that's considered to be a problem altogether. So we had a machlokes from one extreme to another. There was some Rishonim, which is the Shmuel Aleket, who quoted the Beis Yosef, said that there's no problem at all. So if you're Rayan, there's no, it's not called Erech Tzeveya, it's not called Tzeveya altogether. And there are other Rishonim that said, no, there is an absolute Tzeveya on ochlin. We pointed out that it seems to be a clear Gemara about the top. Rishonim having machlokes and nothing, well, it sounds the same, that there is. Gemara talks about Tzeveya on meat. If I talk about a person chef an animal, so maybe he's chayav now for shchit, he's chayav for tzeveya as well, because he's coloring, he's dyeing, making red the area around the neck. People should see that the meat is fresh. The Gemara says explicitly, he's chayav for tzeveya. So how could somebody who's sharing say there's no tzeveya b'ochlin? They didn't meet the obvious ochlin. At the end of the show last week, we gave one approach that was suggested, and the Be'er Halacha pointed out that there was some Rishonim while learning that when the Gemara speaks about coloring the meat, it doesn't mean coloring the meat, it means coloring the skin on the meat. So the coloring of the skin of the animal is not going to be edible. Therefore, when the Gemara speaks about tzeveya, it is not talking about the tzeveya, the edible portion of the animal. It's talking about tzeveya, the inedible portion of the animal. It's quoted from the rule of the Gemara that way. So according to that, then this Gemara really is irrelevant. And there's no Gemara that talks about tzeveya, but the Gemara is not even talking about ochlin altogether. So there is a second approach that is given, somewhat of a fancy Lumbish approach, which is going down the same basic mahalach, namely, to try to show you that the Gemara that talks about the chayef, the tzeveya, the shechet an animal, is not really talking about ochlin. It's not talking about ochlin. What's talking about ochlin? What about meat? The first approach was, no, it's talking about the skin, not the meat. The second approach is about to be, it's talking about physically the meat, but api alocha, the meat is not considered to be ochlin. Why is the meat not considered to be based on what? Is it, you have a good piece of meat for a purim suda, why is the meat not considered to be ochlin? You need a little bit of a salamdish twist to explain why the meat is not considered to be ochlin. So the salamdish twist is based on a sugya that appears in all places in Maseches Menachos. I didn't put it on the Maramkom of the Tuk, I put the Mishnah Mel, who quotes the discussion from the Gemara. Just a little bit of a background. The Gemara Maseches Menachos of Chafalas talks about the mitzvah of Malichas HaKarbonos. One of the dinim when you bring a korban is that any part of the korban that goes on the mizbeach has to be salted. Tumach, kol kavach ha'takos melach. Most people are familiar with that din only because in the middle of putting salt on the table and your bread. But the real din the right is when you bring a korban, you have to salt the part of the korban before it goes on the mizbeach. So the Gemara in Maseches Menachos has a drasha that tumach afilu b'shabbos. But the mitzvah malicha the kavanas takes place even on Shabbos. Most kavanas, in fact, not even brought on Shabbos. The kavanas tibor, the communal kavanas, which have a very specific time to them, namely kavan tamid, the kavan musaf, etc. Those kavanas are deicha Shabbos. And part of the process of the korban is malicha. The kavan derives from the pasuk that malicha is permissible even on Shabbos. So we take a look at the sixth of the Marma Kavos. The end of the first line, it's the Mishnah Melech and Ocha Shabbos. The Da'at, the prayer comes, Rabba Darish Rebraisa, Takr Melech, Vafilu B'Shabbos. That superfluous phrase of Takr Melech, it already says the salt meat, Yalko Kavoncha Melech Timlach, and then at the very end of the post it says Takr Melech. So that added phrase, Takr Melech, the Tarish Rabba next place does, is coming to include that even on Shabbos, you do Melech at the Kavonah. The Kashali, to Lamai Yitzrich Korah. Why do you need a pasuk to tell me that you're allowed to do malichas and karbanos on Shabbos? Well, lo leika is a Torah malichas basa. What is the would there have been? If the Torah is telling you that it's okay, it's mutter, the implication is obvious, that there would have been some kind of a prohibition. So the marshal, the Torah says, that you're allowed to do a prasmil on the eighth day, even if it falls out on Shabbos. The implication is obvious, that if not for the heter and Torah, it would have been also. I understand, you know, I cause a person to bleed, that can walk in the araita. We understand the need for a heter to do a bris mila on Shabbos. Let's say the Gemara quotes the pasuk to tell me that you're allowed to bring a korban pesach on Shabbos. If pesach falls out on Shabbos, you're allowed to bring the korban pesach on Shabbos. Why do I need a pasuk for that? Because shechitas abehema is one of the lamed tes malachas. So I understand why I need a pasuk to permit what would otherwise be an elser. But ask the Mishnah Melech, why in the world would you have needed a pasuk to tell me that you're allowed to salt korbanos on Shabbos? What was the terrible malach involved in salting kabbalas, salting meat? Continue the Mishnah Malach in the end of the second line. A kaivlan de ain't he would be ochlin? He said that he said the only possible issue involved in salting something, in salting food, is malacha ba'abe. We'll have to jump ahead a little bit to that malacha. One of the malachas is ibra or. If you process skin, if you take an animal skin and you harden it, you tan it, and you make it ready to be used, that's considered to be a malacha deraita. That's what the malacha is, ma'abe. Part of the process of ibud is to salt it. I don't know how they process leather today, but in the old days, that was what they used to process leather. They would take the solution of salt and put the leather in and let it sit there for a while. That whole process of salting is considered to be a malacha. The Gemara says explicitly that ibud doesn't apply to food. You take salt, you meat. That's not called ibud. Ibud is when you salt your leather, you salt your animal skin. That's called ibud. The Gemara says explicitly, ain't ibud ochlin. It's been erased, so there's no issue of ibud on ochlin. So the Mishnah Melech, there's no strength in this kasha. He said, what possible malacha would have been violated with salting meat for the kavanas? If you're going to tell me that it's a malacha, it's ibud, so the cloud kicks in called ain't ibud ochlin, it only applies to the heart, to the leather, it doesn't apply to the soft meat, to the girl, to the mizbeach. The Mishnah doesn't know why in the world you need a pasuk to tell me that you're allowed to salt the kavanas and Shabbos. It's not there anyway. There's no malacha whatsoever. So the Mishnah continues. Where the title, he says that I was arguing about this topic. I was discussing this topic with one of my colleagues, Hamarinu Yaakov Apaldarani. I can't exactly pronounce that one. I can tell you he was probably Svadi. Mishnah was also Svadi. So he said that I was discussing this topic with him. He sent me the following letter. Zosa Merish and Nimsa Biyadi Shita L'Masechas Menachon. The Rabbi Yaakov of Tanri told the Mishnah Melech that he found an old manuscript on the Sefer Menachos. The Rishonim lo noda l'mi. He says, I don't know who wrote it. It's an old, Ksaviyah from hundreds of years ago. And he's not sure who wrote it. For many, we have this Ksaviyah. It's been reprinted already. This Ksaviyah that he's referring to, for many years, was referred to as the Shittas HaRashba. That they apparently thought that they had discovered it actually from the Rashba, the Chiddush Rashba on Masechet Menachos. It was subsequently proven to me that it wasn't the Rashba. We don't know who it is. It's from the days of Rishonim. So we could still say Lo Nodu L'Mi, but it's still not quite sure who it was. It's one of the classic works of Masechet Menachos. Remember Masechet Menachos? There are very, very few Rishonim on Menachos. There's a regular standard before Shem did it right on Menachos. And therefore, this was considered to be Rabbi Shem's treasure, this Ksaviyad. But it's printed, it's called the Chiddush, in quotation marks, the Chiddush Rashba on the Sefer Menachos. Everybody knows it's most probably not from the Rashba. But wherever it was from, it's still a Rishon, so can I understand it? And in this Ksaviyad, actually this question isn't raised. So that was the Mishnah Melech and the Podanri, who 300 years later are sitting and talking about this Kasha, was already discussed by the Rishonim. So now he quotes the Zohar Shah. This one appears in this through the Rashba. Yesh the Hakshav. He's a malacha gan. Did the crow love the Dachi Shabbos? A malach ain't a elevation of Abbevini Ruchin. I'm just exactly dash it. I'm just verbatim the same crash. But nearly, the Kavan says this quote for Rashba. The Kavan, the Kavan Tamid, the Musa of Shabbos, by a Kolil, the Ain on the Echal, laugh to even Ochlim Dami, Kavan Shain on the Echal. So comes this Rishon and says that you cannot hide behind ain't ibud ba'ochlin because this food, quote unquote, is not going to be eaten. Why is it not going to be eaten? Because the halacha says you're not allowed to eat it because it's about tchel, it's supposed to be nikma, the covered all of the ivarma nikma agavi mizbeach. So whatever is offered agavi mizbeach is not called ochel, even though you and I both know that it's edible. I mean, in theory, physically, a person can eat it, but since halachically it's not edible, we can no longer label it as ain't ibud ba'ochlin. And it's considered to be for practical purposes, subject to the malacha of the arayis of ibud. So I can this risha. So you see a tremendous chiddush in this risha. You see from this risha, really it's a dual chiddush. Number one, he's saying that ochel is not an absolute objective definition of ochel. Is ochel going to change according to the time and place? This piece of meat looks like meat to me, but since I know for a fact this meat will not be eaten, therefore, it's no longer called ain't ibud ba'ochlin. And number two, the criteria that they use to measure whether something is ochel or not are not even necessarily physical criteria. They're spiritual criteria, the halachic criteria. So if you take a piece of meat and you ask 10 goyim whether this meat is edible or not, they say, of course, that's great. We'll get steak out of this.
But it doesn't matter what they say. We have to ask what the halacha says. Since the halacha says you are not allowed to eat this meat because it's Ur Lagabi HaMizbeach, therefore it's no longer considered to be Ochlin. If it's no longer considered to be Ochlin, then the rule of not eating the Ochlin doesn't apply, and it will be subject to the potential Yeraisa of Malachas Ma'abed. That's the Chiddush Gadol from this Ksaviyat in the Rishayim. So come to Chacham Tzvi, and says the Atzmo, the same for it when it comes to Malachas Tzveya. Absolutely, the rule is that ein tzaveh ba'oichlin. Klagot of Sefer Reim, Shmuel Yalachin, the Mishos, the right, there's no tzaveh ba'oichlin. Just as there's no ibud ba'oichlin, ein tzaveh ba'oichlin. Certain malachas were only given to inedible items. So all these malachas, which were involved in either tzaveh, which was involved in preparation of the wool, or ma'abed, which is involved in preparation of the animal skins, these are not the food malachas. You don't know what the food malachas were. Bore, toche, mishal, wash, those are the food malachas. We're done with the food malachas. It was 2 years to learn this and do it in the past. We're done with that. We're now learning the non-edible parts of the Mishkan's malachas. So those malachas, which are not related to food, the klagot, even the ochlin, they ain't sivir malachas. The tzent hacham tzvi, how do you define what's called ochlin? Anything that the halacha says you're not supposed to be eating is no longer called ochlin, exactly what this shita said. And therefore, the rules of Ein Ibud or Ein Tzaveh are not going to apply. Says the Chacham Tzvi, we're going back to the case of shechting the animal. You shechted the animal, and you shechted it, and you get the blood all over the neck, and you're thrilled with blood. You take out your paintbrush and start painting up the neck. You want that neck to look really red, red, red. Give that impression that the meat was actually shechted right now. Says the Chacham Tzvi, how in the world are you ever going to eat that piece of meat, the neck part of meat? You're never going to be able to eat that. You know why? It's an issue of dam. How are you going to get the dam out of that? The dam, how do you kash a meat? You kash a meat by salting the meat. The meat, the salt draws out the blood that's inside the meat. If you have blood that's sitting, painted, that's spread all over the external, the surface of the meat, there's nothing you're ever going to be able to do to get that blood off. Basically, that piece of meat, that neck area, which is all redded, which is exactly what you want to happen, you're going to take that and throw it in the garbage. Nobody can eat that because Allah says you can't eat that. Oh, come to the country and says, if the halacha says you can't eat it, then maybe it's not called, quote-unquote, ochlin. If it's not called ochlin, then ein tzaveh ba'ochlin doesn't apply. If it's ein tzaveh ba'ochlin, then yesh tzaveh, then not ochlin. So it's similar in the sense of the way, same way the Mishnah Berurah is quoted from the Yerza Rua, that what we have to do is take this piece of neck meat and call it not ochlin. That was the goal of our sugya. Because if your Ram says ein tzaveh ba'ochlin, the Gemara says there is tzaveh on the part of the neck that you shech. So you have to make this piece of this area of the animal not ochlin. So the Mishnah Berurah did it by saying, well, it's not the meat, it's the skin. The Chacham Tzvi says, no, it's the meat, and it's still not ochlin. Because since the mice are halachically it's not going to be in, that's not considered to be ochlin. So both of these terutzim are similar, although the first one is simple, just change it from the flesh to the skin. According to the Chacham Tzvi, you have to change it from halachically ochlin to halachically not ochlin. But the similarity in both of the terutzim is that we're trying very hard to change, in a sense, that Gemara in Masechet Shabbos, to make the Gemara not talking about classical.
Even now, you know that we don't eat the neck.
I mean, it depends how ready and fluffy the neck is. If there's a lot of blood all over the neck, it really comes through the tears and dress. You probably get on the blood. You're asking, I'm a grandson of butchers. My grandparents are both butchers, but more than that, I can't tell you.
At the time he splashed it with the blood, it was
okay. It's kind of like it's like ochlin and not ochlin work yachas. It's like the malach and the not ochlin all happen together. I don't know.
Not kosher ochlin is not defined as ochlin.
That's what the Shita just said, yeah. Shita just said it. So is there a different approach to this, I guess? Can we possibly explain away this Gemara in Masechet Shabbos, according to the Rishonim, who say that ain't to them ochlin, without having to do a little bit of surgery, no pun intended, on that neck of the animal? Maybe we should go back to the cloud of Ein Tzaveh Ochlin and ask ourselves, why should that cloud be so? Maybe instead of pushing and being deichik and saying, Hachlan Ma'askina, Nekamon Shabbos is the skin, not the meat. Or Hachlan Ma'askina, it's going to be not edible, halachically, and therefore it's not on Ochlin. Maybe we should go back to the drawing board and reevaluate the cloud of Ein Tzaveh Ochlin, according to the Shonu Chachachi cloud, and understand why that cloud is true, and then maybe we can understand the Gemara Shabbos a little bit simpler. So there is a possibility that maybe this rule of the Ein Tzaveh Ochlin, maybe it's based on something totally different. Maybe the idea of Ein Tzaveh Ochlin This is really a strange principle. Like, why should there be such a klal? It's like a Mishkan-oriented kind of halacha. Whenever we make these kinds of statements, where is Rebbe weary? You know, how much we do derive from the Mishkan, how we don't derive from the Mishkan. So the Chayotim suggest that maybe this klal, the Ein Sveb Eichlin, is not like a halacha without a reason. A halacha must see the Ein Sveb Eichlin. Maybe it's part of a general picture. The general picture is, we know, and hopefully we'll talk about it more in the next figure, many of the malachas, particularly the malachas of Tzvei, also according to many, is subject to the rules of kayama. It has to be some degree of permanence to it. It's almost like the Mishnah says, if you write on Shabbos with fruit juice, you play a little bit, write with some gravy, some letters, that's not called kaysim in Shabbos. Why is eilashu kayama? Something that's not made, not intended, not literally going to last for a significant amount of time, which is a big question, how long is significant? We'll get to that in the next video. But it has to last for some degree of time in order to be considered to be a malacha. So the same is true when it comes to tzaveya, at least according to the Rambam. That's why we'll talk a lot about makeup on Shabbos as part of that discussion. The person puts on makeup on Shabbos, and the Rambam says it's a misdeh rabbanan, not a misdeh d'oraisa, because it's dafka not shel kayama. The kayama does play a critical role in many malachas, including most probably the malacha of tzaveya. So comes the kayama and says, most of the time, when you have tzaveya ba'ochlin, it's not going to be all that permanent. You know why it's not going to be all that permanent? You can eat the food in about 5 minutes. It's usually the goal. You call the food, you're dying the food, and then you can eat it right away. That's not considered to be a severe shel kayama. But what if a person does an act of tzaveya and happens to physically, technically be ochel, but it's really the goal is to last for some degree of time? It says the kayama, so guess what? And there is no rule called Ein Tzaveya B'Ochlin. It's not an absolute klal, chit lo yav, Ein Tzaveya B'Ochlin. Ein Tzaveya B'Ochlin is usually a corollary of the rule of Ein Tzaveya, Ein Asher Kayama. 90% of the time, Ochlin is going to be Ein Asher Kayama. Every once in a while, you may look out and get an Ochlin that really is going to be Asher Kayama. And look at how it's not going to be Chayav. What's the example of a Tzaveya B'Ochlin Asher Kayama? The butcher, you have shechted the animal, who's telling the neck of the animal, he wants that neck to remain close for a little bit of time. Again, we're walking a tightrope here because we don't know precisely how long is. How long is kayama? We're not supposed to be waiting until the next week to figure that out. Says the kayama, it's quite possible that the person, the butcher, who's coloring, who's quote unquote dyeing the neck of the animal, who's reddening the neck of the animal with the blood of the shechita, that's shel kayama. That customers will come in later, they're coming tonight, they're coming tomorrow. That's already considered to be shel kayama. Masha'in came with, if you remember what the Sefer Ray was talking about, he was talking about a guy who has berry juice on his fingers, and he picks up his bread, and the question is, did he just call the bread or not? So the Sefer Ray said, yeah, he laughed and says, oh, that's not called tzaveya, because it's ein tzaveya b'ochlin. Says the kayama, what he really meant to say is, ein tzaveya b'ochlin, because you're about to put the bread into your mouth, you can eat the bread in 10 seconds from now. So what kind of tzaveya is that? So there's no absolute cloud called ein tzaveya b'ochlin. It really is that usually Ein Tzaveya B'Ochlin is usually Ein Tzaveya B'Ochlin Asher Kayama. That's already conceptually a different type of an approach to this. Then we have a fourth possibility, where also maybe we have to go back to the drawing board and understand why is it that Ein Tzaveya B'Ochlin? So the Sefer Kiryas Yaakov, the Stipler, Mesech HaShabbos, he suggests that maybe we totally misunderstood the whole cloud of Ein Tzaveya B'Ochlin. The reason why Ein Tzaveya B'Ochlin is because most of the time when a person is coloring the food, like the case of the Sefer Reim, he mamish couldn't care less about it. It totally doesn't interest him. He has other goals, he has other reasons why he's putting in certain things in the food. It happens to be that the food is getting colored also. But when you do it after tzaveya without any kavanah tzaveya altogether, maybe that's what it means, ain't tzaveya b'ochlin. Perhaps it's very questionable whether that's what the Sefer Reim meant. It doesn't sound the way from the Sefer Reim. But one could argue that maybe there's a klal exists, but a tzaveya b'li kavana is not called tzaveya. Just as we said, according to the Chayonim, a tzaveya b'li kayama is not called tzaveya. There's a fourth shot, according to the disciples, tzaveya b'li kavana is not considered to be a tzaveya. When the Rishonim used the phrase, they didn't mean it was because of oichlin. Oichlin is a simen, not a siva, not a reason why it's mutter. Oichlin is usually indicative of the fact that it's not such a kavana tzaveya. Therefore, says the disciples, what if you know for a fact that you do have kavanas tzaveya? You take your food coloring, the kishma kainu, and you put it into a food to color it, he says it's not tzaveya. He states it's not tzaveya. So therefore, says the Stipler, going back to the case of the Gemara, the person who's coloring, who's reddening the meat and the neck of the base of shechita, what do you mean this kavanah is not to redden it? That's exactly what he's doing. That's exactly what the Gemara said. That's what his goal was. His goal was to make it red so that the buyers would see and know that it's fresh meat. So according to this guy, the disciple, if we actually go back to the original Gemara, when we introduce Sugya Vein to Rabbi Yochanan, it really reads very smooth. Because if you take a look back to the first of the Gemara, when Rav said that if a person shechs meat, he's chayef not only for shechit, he's chayef for coloring, to dyeing the animal also, you go back to the first of the Marmar Kovas, in the second line, Amar Rav, middle of the line, Milsu the Ami, that which I said, the Yechayev Hashem Tzeveya, Eim Abad Milsu, I better explain myself, the Lalesu Dor Basrev L'Chachor Alay, because otherwise the later generations are going to come and going to attack me. Why are they going to attack him? Tzeveya Mani Chalei. What's going to be the attack against Rav? What does the guy care about the act of Tzeveya? He couldn't care less that it's being dying. What was that attack exactly? What was Rav afraid of? So, according to the disciple, makes a lot of sense. Rav was afraid that people were going to say, that's Tzeveya. Without Kavanah Tzeveya, there's kin Tzeveya. So, no, so that's what Rav had to explain. Yichad l'lispas beis ha-shchit ad-Allah. Kech l'chuzah in sheikh l'eis ha-lizbenu-minei. So Rav had to explain, no, don't misunderstand what I said. Don't think that I said Yechayev Hashem Tzeveya, even though there's no Kavanah Tzeveya. There is Kavanah Tzeveya in the case of the Reis HaShechita because the person wants the purchaser to see that the meat is fresh. But in terms of learning that nobody would really care, if nobody would really care that the meat is fresh, and even though the meat is getting colored, that would have still posed a problem. So Rav was sensitive to that objection because that objection is a valid objection. And the only reason why the Reis HaShechita is Chaya is only because there is Kavanah Tzeveya. So with all the dust settled, we really have four different biurim in the Gedolei Acharonim to explain this sheet of the Ein Tzeveya B'Ochlin. We know for a fact there are a group of Rishonim, the Shibali Alekin and the Shekhi Arayim, and they just have quoted that Ein Tzeveya B'Ochlin. Cloud of Ein Tzeveya B'Ochlin. Problem one, the Gemara seems to take care. The Gemara seems to support those Rishonim who are saying it is Tzeveya B'Ochlin. So we have four different biurim how to get around that Gemara. The four different biurim really broken down into two categories. There are some who revamped the Gemara, and there are others who revamped the Klal Van Tzeveya B'Ochlin. So the first two groups of Acharonim revamped the Gemara. Even the way the Mishnah Berurah said that the Gemara is talking about the skin of the animal, not the meat of the animal. Or the way the Chacham Tzvi said, the Gemara is talking about a meat. It's physical meat, but it's halakhically going to be traced because it's going to be all full of blood. You'll be up to kasher it. That's not called even the B'Ochlin. Those are the first two groups of Poskim who revamped the Gemara. And yet the second group of Acharonim were revamping the Klal Van Tzeveya B'Ochlin, saying that cloud ain't to Rabbi Yochanan doesn't really mean what it sounds like. It doesn't mean an absolute cloud ain't to Rabbi Yochanan. It just means that 9 out of 10 times, ain't to Rabbi Yochanan will be a Tzvi Hashem HaShok Kayama, that every once in a while it won't be, like the case of the Gemara. Or ain't to Rabbi Yochanan means 9 out of 10 times, it'll be Balik Havanah Tzedeya, that every once in a while it will be, like in the case of the Gemara. So we've been spending a lot of time to try to defend the Shita that ain't to Rabbi Yochanan. I spent so much time on lunch in Rishonim, it would have been much easier to throw my hands up and say, listen, it's a machlokes in Rishonim, we know that the Pashas of the Gemara, that's the problem. The Pashas of the Gemara, that Yesh Tzeveya B'Ochlin. We spend so much time to defend the Ein Tzeveya B'Ochlin. Why is that? Because the Pashas in the Gemara, the difference in the Gemara of Shabbos, seems to be that, in fact, the truth is that the Ein Tzeveya B'Ochlin. The Pashas of Shad is that really there is no Tzeveya B'Ochlin. What's the source in the Gemara for that? So if you take a look at the ninth of the Marmar Kamos, the Gemara Masechta Shabbos is talking about really a sugya of Borer. Going back to Borer, the Rockgate, the Shamar, something we spoke about a long time ago, about straining and sifting, and generally speaking, using strainers is off limits on Shabbos, a variety of different melachos. The dish happened to say, the notes and dates on the Samanis. You're permitted to strain an egg on Shabbos. You put the egg through to separate from the yolk and from the white of the egg. Why is that? What's going on with that to be a sort of a burr or a maracid? Tonyak of Karakal of Shane, Otsinosa El Gabin. I have to be honest that I don't know enough about the preparation and the straining and the sifting of the eggs, but the goal over here was that apparently you wanted to get the yolk out because you wanted to color certain kinds of foods. I think the Gemara is describing like mustard seeds or something. You want to color something to give it a yellowish color. So the reason why I'm separating the parts of the egg is not because the white part of the egg is bare per se, but I don't want it. But it's not for the purpose of eating; it's for the purpose of coloring. And therefore, somehow that's not considered to be part of the halacha of merakeh. We're not learning the sugyas of merakeh right now. Why exactly that should be so? But the only thing that interests us right now is that the Gemara seems to be saying that you're allowed to be coloring your food on Shabbat. You're allowed to and mix it with the mustard seed to make it a nice thing of yellowish food. But based on this Gemara, and I take a look at the 10th of the Ramah Kamos, that's the Dakimosha, the Ramah writes, the Shamati the Abba Mori, the Ramah writes that he heard from his father, Sheshoma Mimari Avram Mintz, word from one of the Gedolim back from Poland, the also Lite Nyayin Adol Mustoch Yayin Lom Shabbos, Yishum Tiveya. So he says that he heard from his father a tradition that you're not allowed to mix red wine and white wine on Shabbos, because doing so is going to color the wine, make the white wine now red. You're not allowed to do that. That's the Ramah. Of all the feed different about Yerayim, Dan Svebe Oakland, there's the Zegam Kinshari. Says the Ramah, according to what the Sefer Yerayim said, we've discussed any Svebe Oakland should be okay. The near Tzasrai Ledvara, and it sounds like a riot from what he said. We have the Sof Sim and Shavit Tess. The notes in Beitzel is Sachar Chardol, you're allowed to put the egg yolk onto the mustard seeds. I forgot the Oslo Mara, even though it's coloring the seeds, it doesn't matter. He says it's still okay. The Ramah brought a riot from the Gemara. Pashas the Gemara is that it's mutter. Therefore, we spent a lot of time trying to defend the sheet that holds that ain't for that, even though we had problems with the Gemara about Sheikhid, and we had a revamp the Gemara about Sheikhid, maybe we had a revamp the Gemara about the Or and the Bosser and revamp the Klal a little bit. But at the end of the day, it was worth it, says the Ramah, because the Pashas in the Loch is that really should be mutter. We should really talk him that, in fact, ain't for that. So it comes to Mishnah Bura, in the 12th of the Ramah Kamas, and he says that Mikra didn't we pass in mutter, the ain't for Rabbi Ochlin. Since we passed it against the tradition that the Ramah called from his father, he says, even though the wine will get red, it sounds like even if you're having in mind to do it, unlike a cycle of the chila, sounds like it's mutter also. Maybe some folks can question that. So the bottom line is the Mishnah Berurah paskens that may eat a mikra din, the coloring of foods and drinks, the mikra din is mutter, based on the principle of ain to their b'eichlet. So we'll get to see in Hashem tomorrow how some of this plays out in the ma'isa for us. Do we really have applications of the shaila, and just how makel are we going to be, and some like bizarre applications possibly that may have been rooted in the sugya of ain to their b'eichlet. Hashem tomorrow.